Okay, first of all, shkoyach to everyone on passing around those Mayer Makomo sheet. It was a job well done. I know it was quite an endeavor, but we made it happen. Our learning tonight is sponsored by Betty and Arthur Kay in memory of Betty's uncle, Yehuda Aryeh ben Yitzchak Zichrono Levracha, and by Gilda Winters in memory of her mother, Miriam Bas Aaron ben Yamin ben Gittel Zichrono Levracha. A couple of pieces of background before we jump into tonight's Mare Makomos. The first is just a reminder of where we left off last time. If you remember, it was 2 weeks ago at this point. I wasn't around last week. So it was 2 weeks ago, and we left off on the following note. We noted that there are 9 mitzvos of the 613. 9 mitzvos in the Taryag devoted to Shemitah. We talk about Shemitah as a mitzvah, but it's really a lot more than one mitzvah. We noted that there are actually 9. And we began our focus on the first two. The first two were both focused on working the land. There are many different types of mitzvahs of Shemitah, working the land, how to treat the payros, Shemitah's Ksafim, the question of loans. The first two both pertained to working the land. And we noted that one is a mitzvah's aseh, and the other is a mitzvah's losa aseh. The losa aseh is quite intuitive, that you shouldn't engage in all sorts of agricultural activities. It's a prohibition, don't do so. But we saw that there is also a mitzvah's aseh, to rest. Now, technically speaking, at first glance, it looked like those were just two different ways of saying the same thing. Now, what the pasuk was that serves as the source for the mitzvah's aseh, we saw that the Rambam quotes 3 psukim, and as promised, we will, Be'ezus Hashem, get back to that, not tonight, but in a future shiur, why there are 3 psukim and what the 3 psukim might indicate. The Rambam quoted 3 separate psukim for the mitzvah's aseh, but the more basic question we were dealing with is, why do we have a mitzvah's aseh in the first place, right? Telling me don't do work and telling me rest from agricultural labor, it just seems like wordplay. It seems like two different ways of saying the same thing. That was the first question we started with. Next, we noted a Yerushalmi in Maseches Kilayim that quoted a machlokas about the scope of this mitzvah's aseh. There was one daya in the Tanaim that maintained that the mitzvah's aseh really just doubles up on the losa aseh. If something is prohibited by the losa aseh, then doing so is not only a violation of the losa aseh, but it also constitutes a bittul aseh. You got 2 averos for the price of one. You've just doubled up effectively the averos that you have done. But then we saw a second opinion in the Yerushalmi that asserted that the isur aseh actually extends beyond the losa aseh. It is true that if you do the losa aseh, you get 2 averos for the price of one. But there are certain activities. Does anyone remember what the example was that was discussed in the Yerushalmi? Choresh, harisha, plowing. Okay, that's going to be very important going forward. But that was the example that was discussed in the Yerushalmi. Plowing is only prohibited by the aseh, but not by the losa aseh. That was the second opinion. And I said, whenever we encounter a machlokes, when we're learning bi'iyun, that's always a stop sign and forces us to ask, why exactly they were arguing. What were they arguing about? We know that they didn't just flip a coin and choose an arbitrary position one way or the other. There's obviously a logic, a svara behind it, and it behooves us to consider what that svara is. Some of you made suggestions already 2 weeks ago in Shir. Some of you emailed me after Shir. We had a lot of good suggestions. But tonight, I really want to develop that question further in terms of what that machlokas might be about and offer a possible explanation for it. That's where we left off last time. Now, a piece of introduction to what we're going to be doing tonight. So, as I noted at the outset, there are 4 pages of Makoros tonight. At the outset, what you need is, the first thing that we're going to be looking at is the Gemara Avodah Zarah on Daf Tesvav. Okay? Starts at the bottom of Tesvav Amud Aleph and goes through Tesvav Amud Beis. And, again, this is really if it will help you. I made a summary of the Shakla Vitaria, because it is something of a confusing Shakla Vitaria. So I made this, cheat sheet for the Shakla Vitaria. If it helps, great. If not, you don't need it. Now, what are we going to be doing? We're going to be looking at a Gemara that at face value is really not about our topic. It only touches on our topic tangentially. It comes up clearly as a side issue. Now, one of the things that's very important when indeed, again, learning in-depth Gemara is to have sensitivities not only to the primary issue in the sugya, but any potential ramifications that the Gemara may have for other sugyas throughout Shas. Now, if we were learning Maseches Avodah Zarah, the issue that we're going to talk about tonight really would not be a primary focus of ours. But we're not learning Maseches Avodah Zarah. We are seeing Maseches Avodah Zarah by way of Maseches Shviyas. We're studying Shemitah. And there is a throwaway line, a couple of throwaway lines in this Gemara that are actually going to have very important ramifications for us. Now, the idea of taking a Gemara and noting its side ramifications and exploring them goes back a long way. I think I mentioned in our first shiur that modern in-depth Gemara learning traces its way back in to one degree or another, to Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, Rav Chaim Brisker. He was the one who really revolutionized the way people study Gemara. It was a whole totally different Derech HaLimud that existed before him, that was known as Pilpul, and he started what's known as the Brisker Derech, which, again, what exactly that is and what it means is a whole discussion unto itself that we can leave for another time. But modern Limud traces its way back to Rav Chaim. Now, when people asked Rav Chaim himself, what was your revolution in learning, he responded, nothing at all. He said, I didn't do anything new. He said, I'm just continuing the work of the Baalei HaTosfos, is what Rav Chaim used to say. I'm just continuing the work of the Baalei HaTosfos. Now again, what exactly he meant by that, and what I don't want to trace the entire history right now. What I will say is the following. The Baalei HaTosfos, particularly Reino Tam, was the one who in certain ways started the Chiddush of looking for all of these throwaway lines in the Gemara and exploring them to their fullest maximal extent. This is something that Dr. Chaim Soloveitchik has highlighted, not to be confused with Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, Dr. Chaim Soloveitchik, his great-grandson, has highlighted in a number of ways. He pointed out that if you look at the Derech HaLimud of the Gaonim preceded Rabbeinu Tam, preceded Rashi, if there was a conflict between two different sugyas, the Gaonim would stick with the main sugya, the main area where it was discussed. And if there was a throwaway line that seemed to contradict the main discussion elsewhere, they would dismiss the throwaway line in favor of the central discussion. So, if there was a line in Maseches Avodah Zarah that seemed to confuse issues pertaining to Maseches Shviyas, we weren't going to be so concerned about that. We'll stick with the main discussion of the issues that appears in the primary Masechta. Rabbeinu Tam said, no, any line from Chazal has equal value, and even if one is not in the main sugya, it needs to be treated with equal weight as the main sugya itself, and that's why Rabbeinu Tam go through all of Shas, pointing out all sorts of stiras from this Gemara to that Gemara, from this Gemara to that Gemara, and resolving them in the process. So what we're going to do tonight is we're going to read a Gemara that, like I said, really, in terms of its primary discussion, is not about our topic. We're going to try to be sensitive to the throwaway lines that pertain to our topic, and together we'll hopefully discover how it might be relevant in helping us understand the mitzvah's essay of Shavuos. Fine. Now, one final piece of background just to explain what the Gemara is talking about. The Gemara is talking about a concept called Taliyah. Taliyah. Okay, that's a word that we're going to use several times. Taliyah is effectively what you can call an excuse or a justification, an alternative explanation. That's what it means in this context. The discussion is based on a Mishnah that appears one Amud earlier than the source that you have in front of you. It appears in Daf Yud Aleph Amud Beis that records an Isur, to sell an animal to an Oved Kochavim, because of a concern that they're going to use the animal on Shabbos. Now you'll tell me, once the animal belongs to a guy, so what? Let them use the animal for whatever they want, so why can't they use it on Shabbos? So the Gemara earlier on Tetzvav and Aleph, we're not going to see this Gemara inside, but the Gemara says, there's a concern that if you sell it to a guy and they would use it on Shabbos, then maybe you'll think it's okay to lend it to a guy for them to use on Shabbos, or to lease it to a guy for them to use on Shabbos. Now, if you own an animal, can you lend it for use on Shabbos? The answer is no. There's a concept called Shvisas Behema that we're going to see in our Gemara that demands that not only do you desist from labor on Shabbos, you need to make sure that your animals are resting on Shabbos as well. That's one of the psukim in the Torah, as we saw in Parshas Mishpatim, if you remember our very first year, that the Torah said, L'ma'an Yanuach, that it's not only that you should rest, but your shor and your chamor, and everybody should be resting over the course of Shabbos. That is the background to our Gemara. And now, we start our first source, after all that background. We're on Tesvav and Aleph, we're three lines up from the bottom, where I made that little bracket as a starting note. Now, I put in four numbers in this Gemara. Obviously, those are just artificial numbers that I threw in, because I think they just make the Shaklo V'Tarya clearer. Once again, if the numbers just make things more confusing, then just disregard them. But let's start the Gemara together. Rav Huna Zavin Hahi Para Le'Oved Kochavim. Rav Huna indeed sold a para, a behema gasa, a large animal, which is what's prohibited by the Mishnah, to an Oved Kochavim, to a non-Jew. Amar Le Rav Chista. Rav Chista said to him, Rav Chista was a Talmud of Rav Huna. Rav Huna was a second generation Amora. His Talmud Muvak, his greatest student, was Rav Chista, who was a third generation Amora. So Rav Chista asks his Rebbe, my taima avad mar hachi. Why did you do this? We just saw in the Mishnah that there's a concern that you shouldn't be doing, they're going to use it on Shabbos, etc. How were you able to do this? So Amar Le, Rav Huna says to him, Emor l'shchita zavna. I'm going to tell you that he's not really buying this behemoth. He's not really buying this cow in order to utilize it for agricultural labor. He's not using it to pull a plow. Why is he buying it? He wants a shechted. He needs lunch. He needs meat. So because he's not really using it for agricultural labor in the first place, the whole concern of the Mishnah never applies. That's what we call a taliyah. His taliyah is, his alternative justification is, it's not about the agricultural work. It's just about procuring a good meal. That's what he says. Now, the Gemara continues on Tesvav Amud Beis, Umina Tema de Amrinan Ki Agavna. And how do I know that you're allowed to invoke such a justification? That I'm allowed to say, oh, you know what? It was really just in order to procure a meal, not for agricultural labor. Where did I get this concept from? I'm not making it up myself, but I have a basis for it in the Tanoim. Disnan, because we learned in a Mishnah, second line of Tesvav Amud Beis, Beishamai Omrim, Beishamai say, Lo Yimkor Adam Para Hachareshes Bishvias. Beishamai say you should not sell a plowing ox, an ox that could be used for plowing, during what? During the Shemitah year. So you already see again that throwaway line that will already introduce us to our topic. Rashi explains, if you don't need to look at Rashi inside quickly, Rashi says this is to a Yisrael Chashad. You shouldn't sell such a cow to a Jew who's Chiloni and doesn't really keep Shemitah because of a concern that they're going to use this cow to violate the Shemitah. So Beis Shammai said you can't do it. Then third line of Tesvav Amud Beis, second word, Ubeis Hillel Matirin, and Beis Hillel allow it. Why? Mipnei Sheyachol L'Shochta. Because Beis Hillel said, you don't know he's going to use it to violate the Shemitah, to violate Shvias. It's quite possible that he's only using it to... because he needs, he needs some fresh meat. He's having a barbecue. So Beis Hillel allow it. Of course, in a Machlokas Beis Shammai, Beis Hillel, in the overwhelming majority of circumstances, we pass him like Beis Hillel. So Rav Huna says, look, I have a perfect example for you of my concept of Taliyah. Just like Beis Hillel said, on Shemitah you're allowed to sell this cow under the assumption that perhaps it will be used for meat rather than agricultural labor. So too, I'm making the same assumption regarding Shabbos. Not Shemitah of Shabbos Haaretz, but regular Shabbos of the week. I can make the same assumption. So that's the first stage of the Shaklavataria. Rav Huna is assuming an equation between an animal working on Shabbos and an animal working on Shemitah. And on the basis of that equation, he's saying, I'm allowed to invoke this alternative justification to allow me to sell it.
Rav Huna is just saying you have to have an alternative option, not that that's what he had in mind. Is that correct?
Yeah, he's saying there has to be a plausible alternative, let's say. Okay? As long as that there's
a
plausible...
He's also saying that Beis Hillel would say this in our Mishnah.
Correct.
Right?
Yeah.
It's a Kiddush. Because the Mishnah doesn't mean Shabbat Chodesh about Shabbos.
Correct. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Next. Two. Second stage of the Gemara. In the second stage of the Shakla Vitaria, the Gemara is going to challenge this. Fourth line. Amma Rabba mi dummy. Rabba says, can you really compare these two cases? I'll give you a really significant distinction between Shabbos, your application, Rav Huna, and Shemitah, the precedent that you're invoking. What is the difference between them? Hasam ein adam mitzuva al shvisas behemto b'shvias. On Shemitah, there's no command to make sure that your animal does not work. Hacha adam mitzuva al shvisas behemto b'shabbos. But on Shabbos, you do have a command to make sure that your animal is not working. Rabba points to a very basic distinction between the two. You want to tell me that it's okay to sell your animal on Shemitah? I'll tell you why it's okay to do. Because that whole notion of Shvisas Behemto, we just said when it comes to Shabbos, it's not enough for you to rest. You need to make sure that your animals are resting as well. That's part of the mitzvah of Shabbos. Is that true of Shemitah? There's no pasuk that tells you that during the Shemitah year, your animals have to rest as well. There's no such thing as Shvisas Behemto b'Shabbos, b'Shemitah. So if there's no Shvisas Behema b'Shvias, you can't compare these two cases. The reason why you can't sell it to a guy before Shabbos is because of a concern that you're going to lease it out to him and you're going to violate Shvisas Behema. But if there's no concern of Shvisas Behema in the first place on Shemitah, of course you'll be able to sell the animal to a fellow Jew, even if he is chashed on Shemitah. Now, of course, there could be a second problem of giving this animal to a Jew who might violate Shemitah. What would the second problem be? Even if there's no Shvisas Behema. Lifnei Iver lo sitein michshol, right? So if you look at Rashi, again, we're not going to see the Rashi inside, but Rashi says that's precisely why you need the Taliyah. Why do you need to say, oh, maybe he's going to shecht the animal? Because there still might be a concern of Lifnei Iver lo sitein michshol, so your Taliyah will help you for Lifnei Iver. But you still can't compare the cases. One is where there's a Shvisas Behema issue, and in the other there is no Shvisas Behema. So stage two of the Gemara asserts that you cannot compare these cases because Taliyah will only work when there is no mitzvah of Shvisas Behema, but it will not work when there is a mitzvah of Shvisas Behema. That's stage two. Now stage three is, again, where things get a little bit confusing. And here, if you look at the summary that I wrote, stage three is a rejection of the principle of both sides, rejection of both sides, I should say, of stage two's principle. Stage two said when there's Shvisas Behema, there is no Taliyah. When there is no Shvisas Behema, there is Taliyah. That's what stage two said. And stage three of the Gemara is going to reject both of those. Take a look at what stage three says inside. And I preface my remarks by saying that stage three, as much as within the Shakla Vitaria, it's a little bit confusing, is actually going to be the most critical stage of the Shakla Vitaria for us. Amar le Abaye. Abaye responds to Rabba. Now, mind you, Abaye is a student of Rabba. Abaye was a student of Rabba and Rav Yosef. So you have a lot of discussion between Rebbeim and Talmidim going on here. Amar le Abaye. Abaye responds to Rabba. Cholhecha de adam mitzuve aser. Is it really true that when there's a command on the item, on the behema, you're not allowed to sell? You can't say, oh, maybe it's just for shechita. You can't evoke an excuse or a justification? I'll give you a counterexample to that. Behare sadeh. What about a field? To adam mitzuve al shvisas sadehu bishvias. A person is commanded for his field to rest on shmita. We just got finished saying you're not commanded to ensure that your animals rest on Shemitah, but the implication here is that you are commanded to ensure that what? That your land rests on Shemitah, that your field rests on Shemitah. Utanan, and we learned in a Mishnah, Beishamai Omrim lo yimkor adam stay near Bishvias. Beishamai, once again, are the ones who say you can't sell a plowed field on Shemitah. Why can't you sell a plowed field on Shemitah? Why? Because of a concern that, what are they going to do? You're going to plant with it, right? That's why you can't. Ubeis Hillel Matirin. But once again, Beis Hillel allow it. What's going to be the Taliyah here? What's the excuse? What's your justification? Gemara says, Nesha Yachol Lehavira. What does that mean? Maybe he's going to leave it fallow. Maybe he's going to leave the land fallow. He's not going to do agricultural labor. Whatever it grows, right? And if it doesn't grow anything, it will be a year of fallow. So I do have, in theory, a way in which I could justify this sale without the purchaser actually working on Shemitah. So even though I'm commanded for my field to rest, Beis Hillel still allow me to invoke a justification or excuse that enables me to sell it. That's the challenge of Abaye. Okay, good. So David asks a very important question. Is this a consideration of Lifnei Iver? Or, because for Shabbos, we were talking about selling it to a guy where the consideration was not Lifnei Iver. Okay, correct. So this is a major point of contention in the Rishonim. It comes up implicitly in Rashi. The Rishon to address it most directly is the Ritva. The Ritva really says, like, what are we, we're comparing apples and oranges here, is effectively the question that the Ritva addresses. Now, again, for the purposes, because we're not doing a shir on Avodah Zarah, I don't want to get too enmeshed in it right now. We are going to touch on it tangentially when we do the Tosas Rid. You'll see the Tosas Rid is going to implicitly address that question. But we'll just assume, for just pure simplicity's sake, that we are assuming an equation between the Isur of Lifnei Iver and the Shvisas Behema, because they're both Isurim, and the application of Taliyah should be the same. Okay?
Shvisas Karka and Shvisas Behema.
So Shvisas Karka adds another layer to the Lifnei Iver. Shvisas Karka...
Really? That's a layer of
Lifnei Iver? No, it's not a layer of Lifnei Iver. There are two problems. There's Lifnei Iver, and there's Shvisas Karka.
But the reason Abaye says the whole point is that it's the Shvisas Karka.
That's right, correct.
That's why he's rejecting Rabba's argument.
Correct.
So why do you have to bring up the neighbor?
No, I think, so, sorry, just to be very, very clear. And maybe I was misunderstanding David's original question. David, what
I was asking that there's no Iser. What if you really sell the karka? There's no Iser on you.
Again, the whole problem of selling is a concern.
You might come to
release
the animal. But that's not so.
Same thing by Shabbos. Just like by Shabbos, there's no Iser on selling. There's a concern that you'll lease it by the sada, by the field. There's a prohibition on selling it lest you come to lease it.
Okay,
right. Okay? And that's an Iser on the sada. Now the Lifnei Iver piece again is a very important piece of the Shakla V'Tarya. In other words, particularly again, or if we go back to stage two, for example, when we're talking about the Shvisas Behema, there you have a Lifnei Iver issue as well. And again, if you want, I don't want to get too bogged down in that. But it's subject to a major machlokes in Rashi and Tosfos, is touched upon by the Ritva and the Tosfos Rid. If you want, for further Iyun, take a look at Rashi, Dibur Maskil, Ein Adam, and Tosfos, the first Tosfos here, Dibur Maskil, Midami. We're going to see a part of that Tosfos, but not the full Tosfos. But yeah, it's how Lifnei Iver plays a role here is a major discussion in the Rishonim. But fine. Let's just finish the Shakla V'Tarya, and then we'll try to mine our points in the Shakla V'Tarya. Maskif la Rav Ashi. Rav Ashi poses another question. And I'll give you a counterexample, Rav Ashi says, but another equal question on Rabbah. I'll give you a case where a person is not commanded to ensure that something rests, and yet we still cannot invoke a taliyah, a justification. He says, Vahare Kalim. It's the first words on the line. We are 4, 6, 8, 10, 12 lines down. Vahare Kalim. Let's take your agricultural tools. There's no command that says, make sure that your plow is not used on Shemitah. Make sure that nobody uses your plow. There's no such command. And yet, nonetheless, utanan, eluhein hakelim she'ein adam rashei lemochron b'shvias. And yet, there's still a prohibition on selling your agricultural tools on Shemitah. There's a whole list of agricultural tools that you're not allowed to sell during Shemitah, even though there's no command on the kelim.
That's the thing.
So then the Gemara lands. Yeah, the concern would be Lifnei Iver, correct. But you can't invoke a Taliyah. You can't say, oh, there's something else.
Right.
So Rav Ashi lands and says, Ela Amar Rav Ashi, rather Rav Ashi concludes, Kol Heicha De'ikad Lamitla Talinon Ve'af Agav De'mitzuveh, Kol Heicha De'leka Lamitli Lo Talinon Af Agav De'ena Mitzuveh. Rav Ashi says this whole consideration of whether you're commanded on your animals, or whether you're commanded on your agricultural tools, or whether you're commanded on your field, throw all of that out the window. If there's a compelling alternative, we take it. If there's no compelling alternative, we don't take it. To say that someone is buying an ox in order to obtain the meat is reasonable. It's compelling. To say that you're buying a plow as a back scratcher is not compelling. So we're not going to invoke that as a taliyah. That is the conclusion of the Gemara, and that concludes our Shakla V'Tarya. Don, you had something?
So how far do you go with selling the field? Because you can always say that you can't sell a field as a non-observed Jew because he might be over in Klai.
True, Moses, nice, that's right.
Yeah, so, you should never be able to sell it.
Fair enough. I mean, that's always going to be a question within Lifnei Iver as to how far you need to be concerned, right, as to how far we're going to go. And that's actually... It actually is a major question within practical applications of Lifnei Iver, within practical questions of Misayel and Dvar Avera, and it does come up. It's just very tangentially, very parenthetically. It's something that would frequently come up in Einstein. If you have a medical student who's on a rotation, and they're called upon to assist in a procedure that's not licensed halachically, whatever it may be, let's say it's taking somebody off of life support in a situation when the halacha wouldn't license it. Of course, it's a major machlokas when you are allowed to and when you're not. But let's assume there would be a procedure that's not allowed halachically, and they call upon this medical student to assist, and it's a Jewish surgeon. Would that be Lifnei Iver or not? Or Misayel Dvar Avera or not? And a lot of times, how far removed you are could impact the halacha, could impact the psak halacha. Fine. Now, after all that Shakla V'Tarya, I ask you, what does this Gemara have to say about our mitzvah essay of Shemitah? How could it help us shed light on our topic? Which line is critical? Why is it critical? And what does it tell us?
Well, just to clarify, when it says Einadam Mitzuvah, it's talking about an essay or a Moshe?
Great question. A perfect question. Okay? So because you asked, let's take a look at Rashi. Actually, you know what? Let me take a step back, because if I highlight the Rashi, that's the giveaway. But if you want, for an answer for your question, Rami, take a look at Rashi Dibur Maskil Adam Mitzuveh. It's the 4th Rashi. Any thoughts?
That sounds like the essay.
Take a look at that Rashi that I just mentioned to Ron. Adam mitzuve al shvisa sadehu. Again, it's the fourth Rashi. If you're looking at the narrow lines of Rashi, it appears on the sixth line. Adam mitzuve al shvisa sadehu. Why are you commanded on shvisa sadeh? Because the Torah says, shenas shabason yehyeh la'aretz. There should be a year of rest for the land. Asay or lo sa'asay? It certainly seems like an asay, right? That was one of the psukim that the Rambam quoted, shenas shabason yehyeh la'aretz. There was a question in the girsa of the Rambam, is it shenas shabason or shabas shabason, right? Because a nun and a bays look very similar, and we have both of those lines in Vayikra pertaining to Shemitah. But Rashi clear here is clearly invoking Shanah Shabbason Yela Aretz, and he's saying that this is part of the mitzvah's asay. Now, what is part of the mitzvah's asay? What line is Rashi commenting on? And why is that line so important?
We were discussing that there's a difference between the asay and the lo's asay, and that the asay includes Harisha.
Possibly, according to one day in the Tanaim.
And that's a land thing. Right? It's not necessarily planting.
Okay.
It's a land thing.
Good.
So here, what we're talking about is the Shvisa Sadeh, which is a land thing.
Good.
And we're saying that the Asay, the Shnai Sabason, is what
causes
you to...
Excellent. Okay. Everybody return to six lines down, right by the number three, right by the beginning of the number three that I put in this Gemara. Amar le Abaye. Abaye said, V'chol eichad adam mitzuve asur. Is it really true that you can't invoke a tliya, a justification, when there's a command that prohibits, that's on the item itself? You are commanded on Shemitah to make sure that what? That your field rests. Is that a command to that you should not engage in agricultural labor? Clearly not. What's the context here? This is a comparison to Shvisas Behema. Shvisas Behema dictates that if I lend my animal to somebody else and they utilize that animal on Shabbos, guess what? Guess what? I have violated Shabbos by doing so. I am responsible to ensure that my animals rest on Shabbos. And what does Abaye appear to be saying here? That by the same token, on Shemitah, I'm not commanded to make sure that my animals rest, but what am I commanded on Shemitah? I am commanded to make sure that my field rests. And Rashi comes along and says, where does that command come from? To make sure that your field rests? The Torah says, Sadecha lo sizra v'charmecha lo sizmor. That's telling you not to do certain things. Where is this notion that your field needs to rest? That you need to make sure that your field is untouched, that it's left, that it's almost a personification of the land itself, that the land gets to shluf too, that it gets a rest. Where does that come from? Rashi says, Shanas Shabbason yehyeh la'aretz. It comes from that pasuk. Rabosai, I would suggest, this is again hardly my own suggestion, this is a yesod in the mitzvahs of Shemitah, that perhaps the difference between the mitzvahs lo sa'aseh and the mitzvahs aseh of Shemitah pertains to the very character of those mitzvahs. The mitzvahs lo sa'aseh of Shemitah, the prohibitions, are prohibitions in the traditional sense that we would think of them. Don't engage in activities X, Y, and Z during the Shemitah year. Don't put down seeds and don't prune. Don't do any agricultural activities that you shouldn't be doing during the Shemitah year. It's a prohibition to you. It's telling you not to do these things. The mitzvah's asay is telling you to maintain a certain character. Maintain a certain character of the Shemitah year. Ensure that the land is given an opportunity to rest. Even if you're not the one who's doing it, make sure that the land itself rests. Don, if you remember 2 weeks ago, you suggested that perhaps the difference between the Aseh and the Los Aseh was, you remember what you said? Cheftza and Gavra, okay? And I think that's somewhat accurate. Now, I'm going to avoid those terms because they're so overused that they tend to just confuse people, okay? But I think that to what you're saying is I think, actually quite accurate. The mitzvah lo sa'aseh is a mitzvah of shvisas hagavra. It's telling you desist from activities A, B, C, D, and E. The mitzvah aseh is telling you make sure that the land rests. Make sure that you maintain the character of Shemitah. Now we're going, there's so much to see on this. Let me just take questions quickly before we go further into like the Tosef Ben Yochanan. No, go ahead. No, go ahead.
Could shvisas have a different dimension of because it's a chiv on all clients are all separate than this?
Okay, yeah, for sure. And maybe...
So it has a characteristic of all mitzvos, it's a chiv on, not only on the individual, not on, it's something about
it's, Israel. Okay, for sure. And we're going to, we'll Be'ez Hashem get back to that, because we're going to see a number of nafkaminas, and I'm going to suggest that perhaps some of the subtleties of the nafkaminas that we're going to see in Tosfos Rabbeinu Ochanan and the Tosfos Rid, perhaps touch on your point exactly. I guess I'll foreshadow a little right now. If the Isser were on you to work your field, right? Let's say you have a scenario in which you just lease your field to someone else, right? Would you have violated the Losa Assay? No, because you haven't engaged in any of the prohibited activities. But have you maintained the character of resting of the land resting during the Shemitah year? No, you've facilitated someone else violating that character, right? So perhaps what Abaye is telling us in this Gemara, and again, we'll see this expressed by some of the Rishonim more directly, is that the Assay includes having others do it as well. Now let me ask you this question. Would there be a difference between a Jewish person doing it and a non-Jewish person doing it?
Not on the Los Assay aspect of it. As
far as the Los Assay is just you, right?
As far as the Assay, I mean the Assay of making the land rest.
There shouldn't be any difference. The way I'm expressing it right now, there shouldn't be any difference. Now, Henry, the way you're expressing it, right, there would probably be a great difference between the two. And we'll see in the Rishonim that there may be some who actually distinguish between a Jew and a non-Jew, which goes back to your point. Okay? Good.
It also has to do with the Heter Shemitah.
The what?
It also connects to the Heter Shemitah. The modern Heter Shemitah.
Heter Mechira?
Heter Mechira.
Why is it related to the Heter Mechira?
Because he sold it to a guy.
Okay, so Heter Mechira has a whole separate... So we'll touch on that tangentially also. And Rabbi Schefter touched on this yesterday. You have a whole separate issue of Los Achanim, which is another sugya in Avodah Zarah. It appears 5 daf later after Tesvav. It's a sugya in Daf Chaf and elsewhere that talks about Los Achanim, that you're not supposed to sell land. Right, exactly. That was a major point of contention between the Beis Halevi when they were... Right, that was the whole issue with the Heter Mechira. Okay. Now, let's take a look at Tosfos Rabbeinu Ochanan here. This is the second source. Now, I'm skipping the beginning of the Tosfos, because as I said, the beginning of the Tosfos ends up with a Machlokas and Rashi about the intricacies of the Shaklavataria, and I don't want to get bogged down there. We're going to start from, it's page Yud Zayin and the word Umefaresh. I bracketed off the beginning. Now, just a little bit of background on what the Tosfos Rabbeinu Ochanan is. Tosfos, as we know, is not a person. It's a group of people. There were many Baalei HaTosfos, but probably the two most significant Baalei HaTosfos are who? Rabbeinu Tam first, and the Ri. I would just list them in opposite order. Rabbeinu Tam was the uncle of the Ri, so Rabbeinu Tam and the Ri were the two primary Baalei HaTosfos. And most of our collections of the Kisvei Ksavim, of the Baalei HaTosfos, and the Rashmi Shants, you could list as a third of the great Baalei HaTosfos, especially because as we go through the Mishnayos and Masechet Shviyos, we're going to be using the Rash's commentary extensively. He was probably like the greatest Talmud of the Ri. Of course, the writings of the Baalei HaTosfos are collections of the writings, the teachings of Rabbeinu Tam and the Ri. But as a result, like in any shir, you have different talmidim with different quality of notes, right? So you have some notes that are better and some notes that are worse. And the same is true of different versions of the Baalei HaTosfos. Now, there's a whole interesting history to all of this here that I'm not going to go into right now. But we know certain versions of Tosfos are let's say, stronger than others. Not necessarily because of the strength of who wrote them, but sometimes it's almost just a function of generations. I'll give you an example. I mentioned that the Rashmi Shants Rav Shimshon Mishants was the, I'd say, you know, among the top tier of Baalei HaTosfos, was widely considered the greatest student of the Ri. So there are certain Masechtos where we have his Tosfosin, his notes, separate from the Tosfos that appear on the Daf, okay? An example is in Maseches Psachim. In Maseches Psachim, we have Tosfos on the page, and we also have the Tosfos Shants. Now, a lot of times, you'll look at Tosfos on the page, and it will have a word like Tema. Right, what does Tema mean? It's a wonder. I have a major question. Or V'im Tomar is a standard language that Tosfos will use to introduce a question. You look at the Tosfos Shants, and it doesn't say the word Tema. It doesn't say the word V'im Tomar. You know what it says? It says Sha'alti L'Rebbe. It's first person. It's like, I'm the one who asked this question. This was my question, and I asked the Re, what do you do with this question? And lots of times, there will just be subtle lines here and there that help to largely clarify what exactly is going on, what's happening in a Tosfos. Now, Tosfos Rabbeinu Ochanan is also one of the very high-quality Tosfosin that we have. Rabbeinu Ochanan was the son of the Ri. These were Tosfosin written by the Ri's own son. Now, why don't we have more Tosfos Rabbeinu Ochanan? Some of them were lost. Unfortunately, also, Rabbeinu Ochanan himself was killed. He died al-Kiddush Hashem. He was killed in a pogrom in the 1100s. So he also died very young. So we also don't have so much from Rabbeinu Elchanan. But where we do have Rabbeinu Elchanan, including on Maseches Avodah Zarah, it's just what he writes is very important. And again, you could see it in this Tosos here that we're working on right now. Like I said, twice already. We're not going to go through the entire Tosos. But if we were going through the entire Tosos, you'd see that going through the Tosos of Rabbeinu Elchanan, it just adds a word here and a word there that just makes the reading of the Tosos far more lucid and clear. But without getting into the whole Machlokas Rashi Tosos, what we're interested in is the end of the Tosos. So let's pick up from that word Umefarish. Umefarish Hachi, this is how the Ri explained this Gemara. Mi Dami Hasam, can you really compare an animal during Shemitah to an animal on Shabbos? If you remember, that was the original question in what I called stage 2 of the Gemara. Hasam Eino the Mitzuvah Al Shvisas Behemto B'Shvias. Over there, nobody's commanded to make sure that their animal rests during the Shemitah year. Hilkach, ein shum genai kolkach, im natir limkor al yedei talia delashchita zavna. Therefore, because it's not really about the animal itself, it's not such a big deal if you sell it under the justification, under the talia, that perhaps they just want it for a barbecue for meat. Ho ve'ein iser harisha b'shvias b'behema. Since the iser of plowing, the prohibition of plowing on Shemitah is not about the animal, she'ein baal ha'behema, we're four lines up from the bottom, she'ein baal ha'behema over, im yaniach le'goy lachrosh basadehu shel goy, because if I handed over my animal to a non-Jew, to use it to plow his field for the entire Shemitah year, would I have violated a single iser? No. I'm perfectly fine. It's not about the animal. So if my animal is leased out to a guy to utilize for the entire Shemitah year, my animal's going to be working hard for the entire Shemitah, I still haven't violated anything. It's not about the animal.
Assuming a guy in Eretz Yisrael, assuming the land in Eretz Yisrael, a guy...
Yesh kinin l'akum l'hafkiyah or ain kinin l'akum l'hafkiyah? This is not even getting into that sugya. That's something that, I guess, Bezer Hashem later in the year will have to address. But this, he's saying, irrespective of that, if the guy is using it, then the guy is using it. Shekivan she'eno muzhar ala behema lachrosh, because I'm not commanded to ensure that my animal doesn't plow. Rather, what am I commanded? Second line from the bottom, one of the important lines for us. Ela al hakarka mi lecharesh or mi lichrosh. I'm commanded to ensure that my land is not plowed. My responsibility is towards the land. Therefore, roi lahatir mechiras habehema li Yisrael achoshed al yedei tliya. Therefore, I'm justified in selling it to another Jew who doesn't keep Shemitah, to a Chiloni farmer, under the justification, to Yuchal Lishchot, under the justification that perhaps he'll sell. Aval inyan shash ha-malacha de Shabbos. When it comes to the concern of malacha b'Shabbos, shetaloi ha-iser beguf ha-behema, where there, the prohibition pertains to the animal itself. Shemuzharim ba'alim aleha shalotase malacha, where you are commanded to ensure that your animal rests on Shabbos. At that point, when you're commanded on the animal itself, it's just unseemly to say, oh, you know what, he wanted it for meat. It just doesn't, it's not appropriate. It's a guy. Now, and then the underline. And now we can understand the comparison to the field. Aval gavd im yichya b'rshus Yisrael zeh. That even though, when a field is in a person's rishus, kishe acher choresh ba b'shvias, hava alav isura de'oraisa. If I own a field, and somebody else works my field during Shemitah, who violates an isura de'oraisa? I am the one who violates an isura de'oraisa. Even still, below hechmiru chachamim mishum gnaizesh lo lahatir limkor al yidei tliya. Even if in that circumstance the chachamim were allowing you to rely on a tliya, that's already a good comparison. Now again, the focus of Tosos is on tliya, which is not our sugya. If we were learning the sugya of tliya, we'd have to get into the whole machlokas, Rashi, Tosos, etc. What's clear from Tosos? Again, it's a takeaway point. What's clear? I own a field on Shemitah, and what happens? Somebody else is working the field. I have violated an Isur de'oraisa. Because of the mitzvah's essay of Shemitah. Mitzvah's essay is to ensure that the land rests. Now, we'll just also see it in the Tosos Rid quickly. Now, before we go to the Tosos Rid, just one more point in Tosos Rabbeinu Elchanan. When he says, "Im yehi b'rshus Yisrael zeh, kesha acher choresh ba b'shviyas hava alav yisura de'oraisa," this goes back to your point, Henry. Who is he talking about when he says acher? Is he talking about anyone, specifically a Jew, also a non-Jew?
Yeah,
It's not so clear. It's ambiguous. It's conceivable that Tosfos are specifically talking about when another Jew does it. That's, after all, the case that the Gemara is dealing with, a Yisrael Chashad, again, what I'm calling the Chiloni farmer, who's planting during Shemitah. So it's not clear that he would include a non-Jew as well. But the Tosfos Rid does so explicitly. Let's take a look at the Tosfos Rid. We're not going to read all of it inside. Tosfos Rid is not to be confused with the other Baalei HaTosfos that we have. He comes from an entirely different location, entirely different time. Not a different location. Tosfos Rid is Rabbi Shai de Tirani, who was one of the Gedolim in Italy during the 1100s. So totally separate from Rabbi Tam, the Ri, who are all operating in France. And Tosfos Rid says as follows. The Tosfos Rid is also, just a quick parenthetical note. There are lots of different Mahaduras of the Tosfos Rid. He wrote his Pirush on the Gemara, and then he would write a second time, he would go through Shas again, and he would write a commentary again, and he'd say, everything I wrote the first time is wrong, and here's my opinion. And then in the third Mahadura, he'd say, everything I wrote last time was wrong, the time I wrote the first time was right, so you always have to be careful about which Mahadura you're dealing with in the Tosfos Rid. And sometimes, if you have a stira in the Tosfos Rid, it's sometimes just due to the fact that you're dealing with different versions of the Tosfos Rid's writings, because very frequently, he'll reject what he himself wrote earlier. Take a look at what he says in Dibra Masvil, Amar Le'abaye. We'll start with the words, Kashyali. Kashya li tuva. I have a big question here. Can you really compare the obligation to make sure your field rests on Shemitah with the obligation to make sure that your animal rests on Shabbos? Tzivoy de shvisas adeyu b'shvias, eino ela shelo yasehu melacha b'sadeyu. The command to rest during Shemitah is just a command on you. This is what he says at the outset. It's just a command on you to make sure that you don't work your field during Shemitah. But if you rent out your field to the Chiloni farmer, ain't no over Hamaskir, you're going to tell me that the guy who just leased out his field violates something? The only problem will be, but there's no command on the field itself. Let's say you wanted to lease out your field to a guy during the Shemitah year. There's no problem at all. Klai Yisrael isn't commanded to make sure that the field rests. What are you commanded? Just to make sure that you do not do any work during Shemitah. Aval shvisas behemto b'Shabbos, when it comes to your animal resting on Shabbos, bein al yado, bein al yedei goyim, asur min haTorah. It doesn't matter who works the animal on Shabbos, you have violated. Because the pasuk tells you your animals need to rest. There, the isser is even if it's done al yedei goy. His question at the outset is precisely the question that we've been dealing with. When it comes to Shemitah, it's just a command to make sure that you don't work the land. But you have no obligations regarding the land itself if you leased it to someone else. That's his initial assumption. But take a look at what he says in his answer.
Doesn't the pasuk Shabbos Shabbos Sunny Yel Aretz contradict what you just said?
Yes. He doesn't understand that. No, he doesn't understand it that way.
Yes, you're right. It does contradict it, but he's a Havmina.
Well, yes and no. Okay, let me just finish because we're literally have 2 minutes left. Well, Bez Hashem get back to address it. But no, in other words, there are different ways of understanding Shana Shabbason, as we saw in the Machlokas in Kilayim already. But look at what he says in the V'yesh Lomar, in the second column. V'yesh Lomar, and now he rejects his initial assumption. I'll answer you. Then when it comes to the land resting, we are actually commanded to ensure that on the Shemitah year. As Rashi explained, this is exactly what we learn, right? This is exactly what you guys are talking about, from Shanash Shabbason Yel Aretz. The Usur Lahaskir Sadeu Lugai B'Shvias. And it is Usur to even rent it out to a guy on Shvias. It's not even going to be a Jew that's working the land. A guy is going to be working the land. That's usher to do during the Shemitah as well. Al b'Shabbos lo huzharnu al shavisas karka. But on Shabbos, we are not commanded on the land resting. Now, there's a lot that we have not yet unpacked. We're going to revisit Bez Hashem, this Tosfos Rid, next week, and a number of other sources in the Rishonim that highlight this theme. But the basic takeaway for us is the following. Conceptually, at least according to, let's say, the Maskana of the Tosfos Rid, seemingly the Tosfos Rabbeinu Elchanan, the Shita of Abaye in the Gemara, we have a major conceptual difference between the Losa Asay of Shemitah and the Asay of Shemitah. The Losa Asay of Shemitah is a mitzvah hagavra, don't do certain activities. The mitzvah Asay is to ensure that there's a certain character of rest for the land itself. And just very quickly, going back to our Machlokas and Maseches Kilayim last week, why is it that some maintain that the mitzvah Asay includes things that the Losa Asay doesn't? The Losa Asay is confined to particular agricultural labors that you are prohibited from doing. Let's say you take something like harisha, like plowing the land. even if that's not included in the activities that you are prohibited in doing, can you say that the land has rested when you've engaged in plowing and overturning the soil and all of that? No, you can't say that's achieved the character of rest for the karka itself. And as a result, there are some Tanaim who maintain that when your responsibility is to make sure that the land rests, that will go beyond the scope of the mitzvahs lo sa'aseh as well. Again, Be'ez Hashem, we will spend next week fleshing a lot of this out. We'll discuss additional Ma'ar Makomos as well as we continue to explore the sugya of the mitzvahs aseh of Shemitah.